And we are live from Twin Peaks out in Madison. It is the pregame show, the award-winning pregame show on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. And, of course, with me are my esteemed colleagues, former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders.
What's cracking, man? You doing all right?
Absolutely outstanding. And former Titans receiver Derek Mason. As we are getting you set for the Titans and the Buccaneers today, noon kickoff in Tampa Bay. Let's start with the state of the Titans. Will Levis is the starting quarterback of the Tennessee Titans, and the Titans are a paltry 3-5. Derek, how do we feel? Let's start with the state of the team before we get to today's game.
Well, I think the team is in a state of it's sort of purgatory in a sense. I would say they're not good. They're not horrible. They're bad, but they're not horrible. They can win games. They don't win games. They keep games close. They play well. They don't play well. This team is just, I don't know what the state of the Tennessee Titans is other than one word, purgatory. It's like you don't know if you want to be really good or really bad. Which one do you want to pick, you know? And obviously them having a new quarterback now, it may sort of solidify where this team is headed moving forward, because I don't think with Ryan Tannehill and the way that offensive line was and him not being able to move, I don't think they were getting much out of that offense. But it seems like now they're getting a little bit more out of that offense because they have a young, a little bit more energetic, strong-arm quarterback.
I just think you're looking at a team that's in a state of emergency, and it starts with the offensive line. The offensive line has struggled in pass pro. They struggled in so many things. And then now you got more guys that are possibly out. You got Chris Hubbard that's banged up. You got Brunskill that I think is out. So you're looking at the offensive line that's struggling. Then now you got a rookie quarterback who's playing good and has a lot of confidence, but he's played well in two games, but you still don't know what he can do. And then you're looking on the defensive side. I mean, we got a situation where the defense on the road, they look terrible, but home they look like world beaters. So you're looking at an inconsistent team. You're looking at a banged up team, and you're trying to look at a team to where what's their identity? What's the identity of the offense? What's the identity of the defense? And then you have wide receivers that are consistently in and out of the lineup. You got Burks that's, you know, catching one pass here and there, dropping passes, and then all of a sudden he gets hurt. So what I'm looking at right now is a team that's in state of emergency because you don't know what the situation looks like.
Here's my thing about the Titans. I you know, 3-5 is not the end of the world in terms of making the playoffs, but you're probably not going to make the playoffs. And if they get to 3-6 and lose today, they absolutely are not going to the playoffs this year. But I'm not really thinking about the playoffs right now. I'm thinking, you know, the exciting thing is the young quarterback. Mm-hmm. The disappointing thing is the rest of the team. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm having a hard time kind of adjusting to being excited for the young quarterback, but being incredibly disappointed that, for instance, the defense is terrible.
Yeah, and that's a surprise to me. Not necessarily the defensive front.
Right.
I had my questions about the secondary, and I still have questions about the secondary. Fulton has played a little bit better in the last two games, but that's still not a good secondary. Missing tackles, not communicating, giving up big plays. But I am really flabbergasted with the defensive line. I mean, this is coming into the season. This line was supposed to be one of the best defensive fronts in the National Football League. They had this swagger. They had this flamboyance about them. They were just – they were that defense. They were – you know, we want to be ranked with the top defenses out there, Washington and Cleveland and other defenses. The first two games, yeah, they did show up. But then they ran into a buzzsaw when they went down to Indianapolis, and they have not been able to get it right ever since. This team, I've said this team from a defensive front, they are getting out-technique.
Yep.
It's not like they're getting pushed around or bullied. They are just getting out-technique by other offensive lines, and this is something that we have not seen from a Tennessee Titan front in the last couple of years.
You know, if you look back at the last couple of years, the one thing that front did is they stopped the run. I mean, you look at the last couple of games they played against the Falcons, they gave up 144, the Ravens 139, the Colts 193, and then the Steelers last Thursday, they gave up 166. So you got a team to where they came in the league that, you know, everybody was talking about they stopped the run, they're physical, stopping the run. But you look at the teams that they named, they just like what you said, they bullied them. They bullied them. They hit them in the mouth. And but it's always been on the road. Mm-hmm. It's when they're at home, they're bullying people. But why is it different when they go on the road? That's where the concern is, and that's where the questions I need to be answered.
I mean, they're playing the same game on the road every time. Take out the Cleveland game, they're all the same, right? They get right to the red zone, they can't score. They mm-hmm. have to settle for field goals. The defense can't get a meaningful stop. They turn the football over. They can't block. They get the quarterback killed. And it doesn't matter if it's Tannehill who's the quarterback
right.
or if it's Levis who's the quarterback. They play at home. They score 27 points, 27 points, 28 points. They're hitting the deep ball. It doesn't matter if Tannehill's the quarterback or Levis is the quarterback. They keep playing the same game. It doesn't matter who the team is. Steelers, Colts, Saints. It's the Ravens might be mm-hmm. the best team in the NFL. They played that game against the Ravens. Like, I have never seen anything like this in my life where, again, it doesn't matter. Best team in the NFL. One score game, late, can't block, can't score in the red zone. Worst team in the NFL, maybe. I don't know. The Saints are pretty bad. But these bad teams, mm-hmm. Indianapolis, just can't get a stop, can't stop the run, can't. And I used to not worry about it when it was Saquon Barkley or Jonathan Taylor or, like, the elite running backs are playing the Titans. Now it's the Scarbini running backs that are just going crazy on the Titans. But the second thing today, though, is Will Levis makes his third career NFL start, but his first start as the starting quarterback of the Titans. Ryan Tannehill is questionable to be the backup today with an ankle injury. What do we like about the young quarterback? And what, now that we're a couple games into this, do we want to see out of the young quarterback, or maybe room for improvement with the young quarterback?
What I like is the poise, is the leadership that he's showing out there, the toughness that he's showing. It doesn't seem like anything rattles him. He got thrown a lot of stuff against the Pittsburgh Steelers. He got hit late once by Watt. But he got right back up and continued to play. So, to me, that's what I loved about the young quarterback. He's tough. He's shown poise. He's showing leadership. What I think needs to get better, for example, last 2 minutes of the game, they're going down to score. You're in the red zone. Instead of locking on one guy and recognizing the defense, you missed a wide-open guy running a slant in the inside of in the middle of the field, yeah. which Kyle Phillips might have bumped his head on the goalpost.
Right.
Those are things that I want to see this young quarterback improve, not predetermine where you throw it. Allow the defense. Now, sometimes you got to put it in there, you mm-hmm. know, to get make a play. But other times, allow what the deep – take what the defense gives you. You can't go broke taking a profit. Move the chain, move the ball down the field, move the chains. That's what I want to see him start to do, because he's missed a few open throws or he's misread coverages that I believe would have gained them positive yards or even touchdowns.
You know, just reading a quote from Mike Vrabel, he said this. He said, you can clearly see there's something there. And when he says that, what is there? I mean, this kid, just like what Derek was talking about, he alluded to, this is a confident kid. I mean, a confident kid that expects to make plays, expects to put, you know, the offense in the right position. So I love his poise. I love what he's doing. But just like what Derek was talking about, he's got to take what the defense gives you. I mean, if Kyle Phillips is open underneath, just throw the ball. I know you want to throw the long pass to Burks to make that spectacular play. But as a veteran quarterback, as a guy that you're maturing in the game, you got to make sure you take what the defense gives you. But just like I was talking to Deron Davenport the other day when they were playing the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he said this. He said when Will Levis walked into the stadium, he just has that it factor, that confidence, that swagger, that attitude of you know what? I understand I'm a rookie, but I expect to make plays. I expect to I expect to dominate this situation. So, you know, even though he's young, he still brings an energy to this team that needs some energy.
Well, here's the other thing too, right? We all see the talent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that arm that he has, that is a special arm in the NFL. And the Titans, we're not used to having that kind of talent at the quarterback position. And so now
Mettenberg.
It's – yeah. So now it's like, okay, can they harness the talent of the young guy before they put an offensive line out there that's going to get him murdered and receivers that are going to hold him back?
Mm-hmm. Well, we will see. Hopefully they can. Hopefully they will. But that's sort of in the, you know – further along once the season ends. But I think this young man is coming along really well. They spoon-fed him, I think, the first two games. I think this game they're going to put a little bit more on his plate. You got to remember, this Bucks team, this Bucks defense isn't good whatsoever. That secondary is bad. You saw what he did in his first game against a secondary that wasn't good. He lit them up with 3-4 touchdowns, the Atlanta Falcons. I can potentially see the same thing happening this week. I'm not saying it's going to be a win, but I'm saying him going out there and doing the things necessary to move the ball down the field because of the secondary and its lack of ability to make plays. But I expect this young kid to come in here and just continue to mature. I'm sure Tim Kelly is going to put more on his plate. I'm sure there are things that he sees now that he recognizes, that he loves. So I'm just looking for this young kid to go out there and get better. And really, I think more than any game for me, I think this is a statement game for him, for Will Levis. Like, I've had the whole week to prepare. I was named quarterback early enough. Everybody know it's my job. I went into the huddle as the starting quarterback, as the leader. This is a game where he could say, you know what? This is why I should have been drafted in the first round as opposed to the second round.
Yeah, and then it's going to start with, you know, the coach, the offensive coordinator, Tim Kelly, and also the Chris London. I mean, they got to make sure they protect this kid. They don't want to have him having a 5-7 step drop when your offensive line is struggling. Put him in position to where he throws the ball early and gets into a rhythm. He gets into a rhythm, then he starts to build that confidence. But I know he's going to play okay today, but I'm just still concerned about the offensive line because there's so many guys out. You got Chris Hubbard that's banged up. You got Brunskill that's not playing. You got Dillard that's struggling. You got all these guys on the offensive line. So even though I love the play of Will Levis, I'm still concerned about the offensive line. It may hurt him.
I do wonder one of these things when we talk about the draft stuff, right? Because he was embarrassed on national television when he didn't go in the first round. We hear guys like Aaron Rodgers, Dan Marino talk about how they fell significantly in the first round when they thought they were going to be high picks. And it seems like those are the things that have stuck with those guys for a long time. And obviously the ultimate story is Brady at 199 and how upset he was. Do you think this is something that, like, still sticks with Will Levis, that will stick with Will Levis his entire career, about how he got drafted in the second round and he got embarrassed on draft night?
If it doesn't, it does. It lives in infamy on ESPN. I mean, they will show that. I guarantee you they will show that in this upcoming draft. They will show it drafts 10 years from
but
now.
But I'm talking about, like, will it still be something that motivates Levis that lives inside of him?
Because it's always going to be there whenever he turns on the draft. Because he will. That's just how players are. You turn on the draft, see who your team's drafting. That will come up. So, to me, that's a forever fire that will be burning for him. And you got to use that to your advantage. You know, it's a chip on the shoulder. Some guys don't come in with chips on the shoulder. Some guys got to fabricate chips on the shoulder. Yep. Some guys got to get mad at something to have that edge. Well, Will Levis's edge is that he got embarrassed on national television. That's his edge, and that will remain his edge throughout his career. No matter what he does, I think he will always look back on that. Like, this is where the NFL embarrassed me. Now I'm going to make the other 31 teams pay every time I play them.
I mean, look at the situation with Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson got embarrassed. I mean, he was embarrassed where he kind of put his head down on the table. You don't think the competitor that he is, you don't think that's going to fuel his fire?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the same thing with Will Levis. Will Levis was embarrassed because he should have been in the first in the first round. But sometimes you need that to motivate you. When you have a guy like that that's motivated by that, look at his body language. He wants to prove everybody that I'm a first rounder, that I can be one of the best quarterbacks in this league. So it's not just going to stay with him just at that moment. I think the whole time through his career, he's going to prove everybody that he can be one of the best quarterbacks.
There we go. We're off and running on the pregame show here live from Twin Peaks in Madison. We will get to the four big storylines of today's game. We'll move the chains, and we'll do that next. Jared Stillman, Derek Mason, Chris Sanders. It is the award-winning pregame show on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. We are live at Twin Peaks in Madison. It is the Titans and the Buccaneers with a noon kickoff. And again, the doors of Twin Peaks here open at 11 o'clock with wall-to-wall sports. And we're literally looking at all the walls-to-walls of sports. And, of course, not only that, but also 29-degree beers. Where is the scoreboard here? Oh, 28.2 degrees Fahrenheit on the beers here today. With that, let's get right to our big four storylines today. We move the chains, and of course, we start at first down. First down. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers gave up 497 passing yards to C.J. Stroud last week. Five touchdowns, including a go-ahead drive with less than 30 seconds to go for Stroud to start. It was an embarrassing performance all around. They try to rebound this week. Their defense is terrible, but they try to rebound this week against the Titans. Guys, what do we make of how bad that Buccaneer defense was last week and probably how much more focused they'll be at home this week?
Well, they better be focused, and we didn't even count, or, you know, it didn't even get counted on the stat sheet that he missed a wide-open Tank Dell for 90-some yards, Whoa. Which would have been a 91-yard touchdown. Then he misses him. He misses another receiver. He overthrows another receiver. So you're talking potentially two more explosive plays for that Houston Texans offense against that bad Buccaneer defense. Do I expect that to happen again? I mean, if it happens again, then shame on Todd Bowles. If it happens again, shame on Todd Bowles. You got to find a way to protect that back end. They're not good. You're not getting the rush up front that you need. If you blitz, you expose those guys on the back end. But you got to understand, they're going against an offensive line that is horrendous. Yep. This Houston's line is a little bit better than the Titans' line. The Titans' line is horrendous. So we may not see that 400-yard passing game, not because the plays are not going to be there to be made. He's just not going to have enough time to throw the ball down the field the way he wants to. So I don't expect Todd Bowles to play the same type of defense that he played against the Houston Texans. But then again, you're going against an offensive line that is the worst in the National Football League.
Yeah, and if you look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you are. Their defense is bad. Their secondary is giving up explosive plays. But just like what you guys are talking about, our offensive line is struggling. I mean, even though, you know, there's a lot of guys on this team up front that we really don't know, they're still getting after the quarterback. You got Cantor, you got two sacks. You got Villa that has three. You got Stilonska, whatever his name is. He's got three sacks. But even though, you know, the struggle in the secondary, you still got to up front the guys that kind of get at the quarterback. So I know last week that the Texans threw for a million yards and, you know, receivers running around. They gave that quarterback enough time to throw the football. I don't know if the Tennessee Titans are going to have a chance to have a chance to really throw the football because our offensive line consistently struggles. So, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I have no idea. But the thing about it is, you know, Will Levis has the potential, I say potential, to throw for a lot of yards today.
That takes us to second down. You guys brought up the offensive line. Daniel Brunskill out. Nicholas Petit-Ferrere, a.k.a. PT is out today for the Titans, probably out for the season with him. The expectation of the offensive line will be Andre Dillard at left tackle, Peter Skoronski at left guard, Aaron Brewer at center, Dylan Radins at right guard, and Chris Hubbard will return at right tackle. Guys, the offensive line is an unmitigated disaster. What do we think?
I think they need four, but they need, you know, they need guys up front that can get the job done. They only have one starter on that offensive line, and that is Peter Skoronski, and he's a rookie. Other than that, everyone else on that offensive line, I'm not saying they can't play in the NFL, but they're not starters. It's clear that these guys are not starters. You brought these guys in here with hopes that it would better the offensive line from last year. You figure, we can't get worse than we were last year. Well, damn it, you're damn near close to worse than what you were last year. So the shuffling around, guys being out, you go from guys that were not doing a good job to guys that are unknown to guys that are not going to do a good job, even when they're thrust in the starting lineup. So, you know, again, this boils down to how does Tim Kelly call his game? Are you going to try to protect Will Levis, or are you going to just, you know, allow five men up front to block their five men and live with that? I don't think you can do that. I think you got to chip when backs are coming out. I think those tight ends got to help those tackles. Because to me, that's the only way that Will Levis is going to have enough time to throw the ball down the field.
You know, and it limits Tim Kelly from making his play calls, because if you look at the formations that they have to be in to protect Will Levis, they got to be in a lot of 12 personnel. That's one back and two tights. So when you have two tights in, you can't let your playmakers. I know Jared's kind of a little bit mad at, you know, Chig. The reason why Chig is dropping footballs is because he's not getting in the rhythm, because he's got to stand and block the whole time. So, you know, Tim Kelly's got to make sure that he put him in the right formations to protect Will Levis and also make sure everybody's all right.
I think the reason why Chig's not catching the ball is because Chig's not very good.
You was high on him at the beginning of the season.
I was, and that was a mistake on my part and a mistake on the Titans' part to think that they didn't need in the offseason to go get a starting tight end, because Chig's a backup. To me, Chig is a guy who comes in on passing downs, but I don't think Chig is an every down tight end, especially – the way the Titans want to play.
Yeah, but in camp, you was all up on him.
I was. I know. Was like, I was high on him.
You was all on him.
Right, but you can't tackle. You can't. The quarterback's not rushed. You don't tackle. You can't. It's totally different.
Well, he just hadn't played.
By the way, I'm done with training. I want everybody to know this. I'm done with, like, going to training camp practices and being like, here's what I saw at practice today, because I just – what a waste of time. I'll go, like, next year when they joint practice somebody, I'll go. But, like, the standing out there, like, all right, Levis was 8 of 9 for
– charting it down.
Yeah, who cares? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's all fake. That takes us to third down. Why do the Titans suck so bad on defense, Derek Mason?
Because of the defensive front.
And you keep talking about them getting out-techniqued against Pittsburgh. I would have no idea what defensive lineman technique is. I'll defer to you and your experience for
they're
that.
They're not. It's like,
but whose fault's that if they are getting out-techniqued?
That's their fault.
That's the coach.
Yeah, that's the defense. I can't put that on Coach Williams. I mean,
nope.
We work on these techniques every day. You know, we work on them throughout camp. And then for you to get in the game, and when you get tired, you lose technique. You allow guys to get themselves in position because you're not hitting that angle that you're supposed to hit. You're not doing the things you're supposed to do. If it calls for you to set the edge, set the edge. If you're not setting the edge, you're going to allow something to happen like it did last week when the guy got outside the tackles and was able to, you know, get 20, 30 yards. So, to me, this team, it's not about the physicality, because I think those defensive linemen go out there and they're physical. They're just getting beat to the point of attack. That's what it is. And to me, in order for this defensive line to show up the way they showed up the first two games, they got to start getting to that point of attack with some meanness. You know, using their hands, hitting the shoulder pads, knocking guys back. They haven't been doing that on a consistent basis the last 4 or 5 games.
Yeah, when you talk about technique, I'm going to break it down to you. Just imagine one of the players are in a 9 technique that's outside the tight end, and he doesn't get off a block. That's bad technique, and that's kind of what you're seeing. When you're watching the whole game, if you look at them at home, I mean, they're getting off blocks, they're doing everything right, but then when they get on the road and there's no pressure on the quarterback, it's because the technique and they're not getting off blocks. That's exactly what we're seeing when we're seeing them on the road. So if they can be consistent like they are at home and play like that on the road, I think they can basically do some things, but their technique is so, so bad.
Can we all agree that the defense is better than they've played?
Yes, they're better.
That it should be better than
it
what
they played.
It should
be better, yes. It should be better.
I mean, even Simmons on the road is not playing well. I mean, he's just not. He's a dominant force. You feel him on the field. But when he's at home, he's like all over the place. But when they get on the road, it's like he's never played football before. And I say that in a respectful way. But they got to play consistent like they're playing at home as they should on the road.
Well, listen, and I think I heard you say this, Jared. It might have been Friday or Thursday, one of those days. I think it was on your show. You got to beat the double teams.
Yeah.
You have to. Yeah. I mean, hell, everybody knows you are that guy. But when you're that guy, you're going to get double teams. Aaron Donald beats double teams.
So
you
when,
see Chris Jones beating double teams.
So
if you
when
want
Jeffrey
to be considered,
Simmons, or when Jadeveon Clowney was a free agent, and the Titan fans were lining up like, oh, we got to get Clowney. When that was happening, you know, one of the big things was Clowney is double teamed the most in the NFL, so that's why he doesn't get sacks. And I just remember Floyd saying, you do realize – all the best players get double teamed.
You got to beat it. You got to find a way to beat it.
And the best players, and it's like, oh, no, there's three guys draped on Antonio Brown, and there's Antonio Brown making a catch because he's Antonio Brown. And you don't think J.J. Watt ever got double teamed in his career? I mean, so, yes. It happens, and I heard Vrabel kind of making that excuse a little bit this week. I actually heard a lot of excuses from Vrabel that I'm not used to hearing, which I didn't like. Specifically,
you don't
one
like
being
anything.
No, well, he was talking about how, well, you know, when he was asked why they're so bad on the road, he was like, well, you know, they've all been one score games. I'm like, I'm sorry, is the coach paid to almost win or is the coach paid to win? Because almost winning, congratulations, Mike, almost winning championship. That takes us to fourth down.
Fourth down.
Speaking of Vrabel, the Boston Globe last week reports that sources close to Robert Kraft dream of Mike Vrabel as the next head coach of the New England Patriots. Today I watched Kraft do his interview on NFL Network before their Germany game where they're trailing 7-3 at the half against Indianapolis. I watched Kraft and he was asked about the state of the team and he was like, well, I've owned the New England Patriots for 30 years, and we've never been 2-7. I was like, oh, boy. So, what do you make of that?
Listen, I dream of being a CEO of Google, but it ain't happening, okay? It's not. It's definitely not happening.
But if Robert Kraft wanted you to be the CEO of Google, there's a chance you could be the CEO of Google.
But it's not. No, not when I'm the CEO of Apple. It's not going to happen because they're not going to allow me to leave Apple because everybody believes I'm doing a good job or a great job. I may not have,
Not everybody here believes that.
They still, I mean, the way they talk about, and this is why.
Who is they?
The fans. The way they talked about Mike Vrabel as if Mike's a good coach. I will not put that, he is a damn good coach. But you talk as if he's won championships or if he's at least been to the Super Bowl. He hasn't.
Right.
That's Robert Kraft would love to hire Mike Vrabel. That's his dream. But will that dream come true? It may not ever come true because if indeed they fire Bill Belichick, I don't think they're going to fire him until the end of the season.
Sure.
But when they fire him, the Titans are not letting Mike Vrabel go. They're not. You're going to have to give up the world to get him. Why are you going to give up the world to get him when you got to build your team? So you go get Mike, you give up the world to get him, and now we got to build a team with no picks.
But doesn't Kraft already know that? Like, if Kraft wants Vrabel, he knows he's going to have to pay for him. Uh-huh. And not only that, is he going to have to pay for him, but Kraft had the success of trading for Belichick. He traded a first-round pick to the Jets for Belichick.
But that was just one first-round pick back in the days.
I know, but, like, he knows the going rate. He knows he's going to pay. And I believe that a rich guy like Robert Kraft, they get what they want because they know they have to pay. Like, a buddy of mine bought a television, right?
Yeah.
Bought a $25,000 television, which honestly must be the greatest television
on
demand. Man,
does it turn itself on?
Does it scratch his ass?
Yeah,
I don't know. But he told me that when he bought the $25,000 television,
that's crazy,
that they told him that there was a second model that was $4,000 less, and he was like, you probably won't really even notice the difference between the $25,000 and the $21,000 television. And my buddy was like, well, if I'm going to spend $25,000 on a TV, I ain't going for the second best model.
Uh-huh.
So when people are like, oh, well, Kraft, why doesn't he just promote Gerard Mayo? Mm-hmm. It's like, well, if I'm trying to rebuild the Patriots and I think Mike Vrabel's the guy to do it, I'm going to pay full price in order to do this. That's why I don't rule that out because Kraft's done it before and Kraft knows, like, it can work.
But I don't think Amy's going to make you give up more than you're possibly willing to give up.
Do you think that – so my scenario of a trade is a pick swap. So you swap spots in the first round. Right now they're 5, you're 10. Mm-hmm. So you go to 5, they go to 10. You get their second rounder and their first next year.
That's not enough.
That is enough for Vrabel.
She's not –
that is the equivalent of two first-round picks.
She's going to ask for more because she knows how much of a hot commodity he is. I'm asking for more. That's just – if you want my coach, show me you want my coach. Yeah. I don't want to swap picks. No, it's not about a swap. I don't want to move up 5 spaces. I can do that on my own with another team without giving up my coach. What are you going to give me? Give me your first pick, and I get to keep mine, and you give me some more to get my coach. If you really believe in him like that, if you think he can turn your franchise around, we ain't swapping picks. No, for what? I can do that with the Cleveland Browns or with Chicago. I could swap a pick with Chicago. They got two first-round picks.
Do you know how much it costs to go from 10 to 2?
Listen.
It costs you your whole draft. Look what Carolina gave up to go from 9 to 1.
You're not giving up your coach.
They wanted Bryce Young so bad, they traded their entire team away, and so now it's Bryce Young with no team.
Yeah, it's really bad. And she's not going to do that, man. This team, I'm telling you, this team has their eye on 2027 when that stadium opens. And she prays and hopes that Mike Vrabel's her coach, that he does well enough. So when he walks into that building, we got our quarterback in Will Levis, and we got our head coach in Mike Vrabel to walk into that new stadium. What? They're not walking into that new stadium without Mike Vrabel unless he just falls off the map.
Hey, D, let me ask you this. What if they consistently start losing this season and it becomes unbearable for them cats to work together? And I told you this earlier in the season. What did I text you earlier about 5 weeks ago? What did I say?
You said the Patriots want Vrabel.
And I said Vrabel's going to go to the Patriots. And it might not even happen, but what if it gets so bad between him and Mark Carthon that they have to make something happen?
Now, everybody's saying now that it's not bad between them, but it almost feels like they're going out of their way to tell everybody that it's not bad between them, which makes me think that it might actually.
Just throwing that out there. I mean, both of you guys has some right comparisons, but what if it gets so bad that they can't even work with each other? That because you got two bulldogs in there that they want to win. They want to do it their way. But what if it gets so bad to where, you know, Amy has to make a decision and say, you know what? I know I love Mike Vrabel, but I got to make something happen that's going to better the fan. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there.
I mean, then that's a decision she's going to have to make. But I'm speaking if I am a owner of a team knowing that it's already been put out there that this team wants my coach so bad that this is his dream hire.
That's a good point.
Well, if it's your dream hire, show me it's your dream hire. And swapping picks ain't showing me that it's your dream hire.
I mean, you're still getting their first next year and their second round pick this year, which is a high second rounder. So basically the pick swap plus the second rounder, I did the math, it's the equivalent of the 17th overall pick in the draft. So you're getting the 17th overall pick and you're getting their first next year.
That's not good enough. Still not good enough.
That's good enough for me. Coming up next, let's take a look at the offense getting ready to go against Tampa Bay. Will Levis make starts number 3. It is the award-winning pregame show live from Twin Peaks in Madison, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Inside the playbook of the offensive side of the ball for the Titans today against the Buccaneers. Who wants to play offensive coordinator? And if I don't get a volunteer, whoever I don't pick then has to be defensive coordinator, and I don't know if you want to coordinate this defense. So who wants to be offensive coordinator?
I'll take offensive coordinator. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay, Chris, you are Tim Kelly going against the Buccaneers for Will Levis today. What are you doing to keep that man alive and to actually score some points, unlike what this team has been doing on the road this season?
Okay, the first thing I'm going to do, number one, is I'm going to protect Will Levis. That's number one. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put him in the right formation. The right formation is 12 personnel, one back, two tights to protect him. And then the thing that we've been talking about all year and all season is Derrick Henry needs to run the ball. Last week against Pittsburgh, he ran for 75 yards. But I'm not taking that guy off the field. If I got a struggling offensive line, if I got a quarterback that is a rookie, I'm going to put the ball in Derrick Henry's hands between 30 and 35 times a game and just go eat. That nice and simple, baby.
Now, you're going to get a lot of people mad.
So
I call
why?
The Boohoo Tajay Spears crew that's going to say, oh, no, you Spears, you can't take him off the field.
I didn't ever say you had to take that you couldn't take Spears off the field.
You wanted to give him Derrick Henry's carries.
No, it's not about getting Derrick Henry carries. It's about being on the field, period. Allowing he and Derrick Henry to be on the field at the same time. Now you have the ability to open up your run game even more because people are paying attention to Derrick Henry, and then Tajay Spears get the ball. He is a guy that has the potential to make plays for you. And you don't want to take a play. You don't want to have a playmaker sitting on the bench all day.
Right.
There are ways that you can incorporate he and Derrick Henry into the offense and the offense being profitable because of that. I think when one is on and one isn't, I think it does diminish your offense somewhat. When both of them are on the field, I think you're capable of doing more things, not just in the run, but in the pass.
What do we make of Treylon Burks being out today? Uh-oh. Again, he suffered the injury against the Steelers, which probably means more targets for Chris Moore and Nick Westbrook-Ikhine.
You know, just kind of looking at the whole situation.
Oh, and Kyle Phillips, by the way, who actually did catch the ball on Thursday night against the Steelers.
Well, you are grouchy all the time. No, with the situation with Chalmers, I mean, you can't help injuries. But if you look at before he got injured, he still was inconsistent. He's dropping passes, not in the right spot. And I'm getting kind of tired of hearing the word potential. Yeah, I love the word potential, but all it is just hidden ability. I don't want to see the hidden ability. I want this guy to make explosive plays like he made in camp. Everybody was oohing on. You was oohing on, Jared, about he made a one-hand catch. He did all these great things. I want to see that transition from the practice field to the play because he has the potential to make the play, but he consistently gets hurt and he's not in there.
I mean, Treylon.
You don't look like you have anything nice to say.
I mean, no. The kid.
It's unfortunate.
Chris said it. It's unfortunate that he hasn't been able to get the rhythm of games, meaning playing consistent games and maturing in the game as you play. The only way you're going to get better in this game, if you have that type of potential, is if you play. Go out there and play. Learn from your mistakes. And Treylon just hasn't been out there enough to learn from his mistakes. He hasn't been out there enough to get himself truly adjusted to playing in the NFL. And then when he has been out there, it hadn't looked good. Either he's not in the flow of the game, they take a whole quarter and a half, two quarters, to even get him a ball down the field, or he's dropping passes, one of the two. So to me, it's unfortunate because I do believe the kid is working hard. I do believe the kid wants to be great, but because of injuries and just the inconsistencies, he just hadn't. And I'm hoping, you know, he needs to have one of those games like a D-Hop game. You know, we were wondering, you know, the D-Hop, you know, he's going to catch the ball, but does he still have that playmaking explosive ability? Well, he showed it 3 weeks ago, and everybody was like, that's the D-Hop that we wanted to see. Treylon needs to have one of those games.
Yeah, and he just needs to have that big catch. Once you get that big catch, then it exudes in confidence. But just watching him, you know, over the last couple of seasons, you know, he just doesn't look like a confident player. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at in camp, I mean, he's confident. He's catching one-hand passes. Everybody's like, oh, my gosh, he's the next thing since sliced bread. But when he gets into the game, he struggles at running routes. He struggles at making the big catch. Yes, he makes one here and there. But Derek knows in this league that if you're going to last in this league, you got to be consistent week in and week out, and we're not seeing that with Treylon Burks.
What are the problems in the red zone?
Wow. For one, they don't have who I believe was going to be their red zone threat to people. And this is why their offense, I believe, is struggling in the red zone. Has nothing to do with Derrick Henry. The offensive line, yes, we can always go to the offensive line. But the two guys, and we just got finished talking about one of them,
yep.
Treylon Burks. The other is Chika Conquo. Both of those guys, big body guys, they are made to make plays. They have the body type to make plays in the red zone, and they haven't been able to.
They should be contested catch guys, and they can't make contested catches.
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying, because once you get in the red zone, nobody's going to be wide open unless the coverage was blown. Everything is going to be tight catches, and the two guys that you thought were going to be there and were going to make plays for you in the red zone, they hadn't been able to show up.
Right.
Now, if I'm Tim Kelly, I'm looking at it from this standpoint. Two guys that I'm looking to throw the ball to, Wiley and D-Hop. Those are the two guys. More importantly, D-Hop. Whenever he's out there in the red zone, I am looking to throw him the ball first, and then we can go to everybody else. This team has to find a red zone threat, and they have not been able to find it because of the lack of production in Chika Conquo and Treylon Burks, and then teams doubling D-Hop once they get in that red zone.
You know, since we looked at last week with Kyle Phillips, would you throw him in that bunch just because he's a more shifty guy in the slot to where he can
make
a choice route or a slant because he's got the quick feet? But can he take the hit? That's what that's what we're worried about. But you guys are right. I mean, Chig is a big body. Burks is a big body. You know, Hop's a big body. They got to figure out a way to get those cats to football, and I just think that they're not.
I watch games, as we all do, around the league. And I know, you know, things are not always that way or always just so crisp and clean cut. But it seemed like other teams, like how can the L.A. Rams score with Cooper Kupp just about every time or the other Puka Nacua? and everybody knows they're getting the ball.
Yep.
But yet still, they find a way to get them the ball.
Good point.
I don't understand that with the Titans. Everybody knows D-Hop's going to get the ball. Still throw it. Find a way to get him.
Yep.
They don't stop the other teams from getting their number one guys the ball. Why are they stopping the Titans from getting the ball to their number one guy? Yep. I don't understand that.
And it starts with the formation. I will put D-Hop as the number one wide receiver. I go a 3-by-1, 3 receivers to the left and 1 to the right. And then also, I put him at the number one and just come straight down the line, throw it to him, and go in the end zone. You can do things like that, kind of like what the Patriots did in the Super Bowl, just
yeah.
to get his ball, get him the ball, and let him make a play. But
what receiver do you trust the second most in the red zone right now?
Chris Moore.
I would go with Kyle Phillips.
I'd go with Westbrook Akine. And the fact that we can't all agree on one, I think is pretty telling. I think that's pretty telling. Coming up, we'll take a look at the defensive side of the ball. Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Baker Mayfield, and that terrible, terrible, terrible Titan defense. We'll get to that next. Live from Twin Peaks in Madison, it's the pregame show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Hate to say it, but Derek, you signed up to be in charge of the Titans defense. Titans defense has been horrible. They were horrible against the Steelers. They were horrible against the Colts. They were horrible at times. Played well in the red zone against the Ravens. And they're good at home, but they're on the road this week against Tampa Bay. Baker Mayfield, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Cade Otton. They've got two running backs. And the thing that we should remember is while C.J. Stroud threw for a gajillion yards on Sunday, he had to have that comeback drive at the end of the game because Tampa put up, I believe, 33 points, 37, somewhere around. I think it was 39, 37, something like that. So they scored. You know, they put points up on the Texans. Derek, what do we think about the defense today?
Oh, man. The Titans defense, obviously, we know that front isn't good. The secondary hasn't been good, even though Fulton is playing a little bit better. I don't know if Roger McCreary playing today.
Yes.
So that's good because Bunting is not playing. So to have, McCreary back is a plus. But yet and still, this defense has to find a way to stop this Tampa Bay offense. Listen, we talked a lot, of negative things about Baker Mayfield in past years. But I don't think you can say, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers' woes are because of Baker Mayfield. He's playing really good football right now, Baker Mayfield. He's taking care of the football, which he hadn't done up until this point. He's finding wide open guys. He and Mike Evans have built this rapport where, listen, if Mike's one-on-one, I'm throwing it to him using that big body at 6'5". So the Tampa Bay Buccaneers' problems aren't because of the quarterback. Now, what the Titans need to do is, because Tampa's run game is horrid, Titans need to force the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to run the football. Double Mike Evans. Find out where he's at all times. Even Godwin. Godwin is more of their middle of the field from 5 to 15 yards, middle of the field or the right side of the field. They got to find a way to take Godwin out of the middle of the field and double Mike Evans on the outside. Force Tampa to prove that they can run the football. And that's when, Simmons and Tart and Autry, these guys got to start playing the way they're paid. They haven't been playing that way the last 4 or 5 weeks. Mike said it. We got a lot of money on that defensive line. For them to be giving up over 150 yards per game the last 4 or 5 weeks. This defensive line needs to step up. I wouldn't blitz Baker Mayfield. I would put the pressure on my defensive front to get to the quarterback without having to blitz, because if we don't, they got too many playmakers on the outside. One, Mike Evans, that can dominate the game.
And just looking at the whole situation on defense, I think they need to make Baker Mayfield have turnovers. I mean, if you look at his stats, he's thrown for 1,800 yards, 12 touchdowns and 4 interceptions, so he's protecting the football. And then I think the most important thing that you guys just said is they can't give up the explosive plays. You got McCreary, Fulton, and Moulton. They got to make sure that these guys communicating, because the dog on that offense is Evans. He has 594 yards, 5 touchdowns. Godwin has 498 and one touchdown. So it just shows you that these guys are capable of making those explosive plays. So they can't be nonchalant and say, okay, we're just going to load up and stop the run and get dinged up in the passing game. They got to make sure to be consistent up front and in the secondary.
He's averaging over 16 yards catch, Mike Evans. So he's even after 10 years of consistent football, he's still a deep threat down the field.
He's a great player.
Yes.
Big old dude.
He doesn't get the shine he deserves. But to me, he's a top two or three receiver in this league based upon consistency over the last over the last 10 years.
What do you guys make of what I think is a Titan fan theory that each week the defense has stunk, picks up more steam, which is in 2020, Shane Bowen was the primary play caller of the defense, and they were terrible. Then they went out and brought in Jim Schwartz to be an advisor. They've had Jim Schwartz the last 2 years. Jim Schwartz has gone to the Browns this year. And there is a belief, I think, amongst a lot of Titan fans, that Jim Schwartz's departure, leaving Shane Bowen without Jim Schwartz, has exposed Shane Bowen. What do you make of that?
I mean, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, before Jim Schwartz got here or started helping, this defense was struggling. You throw Jim Schwartz in there, his mind in there, his ability to game plan and put together a package to stop opposing offenses. You put him in there for 2 years. They are one of the best defensive fronts in the National Football League. Exit Jim Schwartz to Cleveland, and now they are one of the worst defenses. They are a middle of the road to below middle of the road defense at this point.
No, they're bad.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They are a bad. They're not as good as what we were led to believe at the beginning of the season. Because what were we doing? We were looking at past years.
Yeah.
You know, Jeffrey Simmons, now he really knows this league. And now he's about to rip it up.
They were dominating their own defensive
exactly.
line.
And they were dominating the offensive line. So it was like, okay, this is what we're going to be in for the season. All right, the Titans got a chance.
Yeah.
But then reality hit. This team isn't as good as what we thought they would be. Can they be better? Yes, but they haven't been nowhere near. After those first two games, this defense hasn't been nowhere near what we thought they could be.
So let me ask you this. Do you think it's a personnel thing or is it a scheme thing?
I have no idea because you look at it. I think it can be both. Because you're talking about replacing, three guys at least, from last season. And I know, you know, a few of them were hurt. But they had built that rapport together. Insert the guys this year. Their linebacker, I'm going to say this. Their linebacker crew isn't good. They're not good. This linebacker crew this year isn't good for the Tennessee Titans. They haven't shown up. They showed up two games. The rest of the games, this linebacker crew has been a no-show. They've made plays here and there. But they haven't been the team. Again, they haven't been the defensive front that we thought they were going to be. And I think a lot of it is because that linebacker group, they're not getting the play that they expected.
Yeah, and Al Shazier, however you pronounce his name, you know, one game.
Al Shazier.
He put some stank on that. But there's some games he looked like a world beater. I mean, you look at when we watched him in camp, and I know Jared hates this, but in camp, he's all over the field. He's consistently make plays. He's physical. But then when he gets in the game, some games he's non-existent. You feel him on the field, and then there's other games you really, really don't. So, you know, I agree with you, Dede. I mean, that linebacking crew needs to play physical and play better.
Well, here's my problem, too, with the linebackers. Mm-hmm. Gibbons just can't run. He can't run. I see Monty Rice running all over the field on kickoff coverage. Mm-hmm. And, look, I'm not to believe that Monty Rice is going to cure all the ills, but I think one of the problems the Titans are having in their run game is that Gibbons can't run. And so why not try the linebacker that can run?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do have a problem, I think, a little bit with the coaching here as far as how they're deploying the personnel, especially this idea that Molden can play safety. Molden cannot play safety. Molden, to me, is like a borderline practice squad player.
He's
like,
not a starting safety
in this league.
He's a box safety. He can't tackle.
Yeah, but you ain't going to put him in space.
He's little.
Yeah, but he's going. At least he can. He doesn't have to be in that much space.
That's what I'm telling you, though. But a little guy that can't tackle is not a box safety. In fact, the box safety is the exact opposite. A box safety is a big guy who can tackle, but he can't cover. Molden can't cover and he can't tackle. So, like that again. That's why I'm telling you. Like he's a fringe bottom of the roster or practice squad kind of guy, and they're sticking him in there and expecting results.
Mm-hmm.
And I am very disappointed by that decision and that thought process.
Well, I mean, they have no other choice. I mean, listen, Terrell Edmonds, you know, he's still learning what they're trying to do.
He sucks.
He's a box. He's the box safety. Terrell Edmonds is the box safety. He's not a guy that you put in coverage. But, you know, this team has no other recourse. They don't. Who are they going to go to? They have nobody else they can throw in there that they feel can get the job done. These guys just got to communicate that back in. And, you know, to me, the guy that should be benefiting from sort of the departure of Kevin Byard is Amani Hooker, because now he gets to control the back end. And he hasn't played well this whole season.
I think Amani Hooker might be
Thought he had, like, great – the promise those two showed together.
It's a Cincinnati game. Yep.
Amani Hooker and Kevin Byard that first and second year. But again, who was it under? Jim Schwartz.
I think that Amani Hooker might be getting a little exposed as he's a good number two safety. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you guys remember a player on the old Titans by the name of Lamont Thompson?
Yes, a big Lamont. Big box safety, Lamont Thompson.
So remember when Lamont Thompson, when Lance Schulters and Tank Williams were there, Lamont Thompson didn't have to start, but he played nickel, and he'd always be in the right spot and get an interception, or he'd force a fumble, or he'd do something. And then all of a sudden, when they started making cuts and guys weren't coming back anymore, they put Lamont Thompson in as a starter. It's like, all right, well, he's elevating up to starter.
Got blasted. Wasn't ready.
No, sir.
I ain't ready, coach.
No, sir. Not only was he not ready, but he was never going to be ready.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about Hooker, which is when he was the number two safety with a pass rush, with Byard as the number one safety,
totally
he was a good player. Mm-hmm. Now that he's the number one safety, he's struggling.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the difference between, you know, it's just like offense. You know, you got your number one and you got your number two. Number two looks damn good when the number one is out there.
Absolutely.
But the minute the number one departs, that number two looks like the number two, and sometimes looks like the number three, because he's just he doesn't command the attention, and when he does, he doesn't go out there and compete at the level that a number one has to compete at every single play. And Amani Hooker is starting to find that out, minus Kevin Byard. Like, you got to compete every – you ain't got nobody to watch your back now. Yeah. You ain't got nobody. If you mess up, they got your back, and they own it, Johnny on the spot. You don't have that guy anymore.
And it's a different type of pressure.
Yeah.
Because when you're coming in off the bench, you know, you're expecting everybody else to make the play as opposed to you. Then now when you're the top guy and you have to make plays and you don't make the plays, now you definitely get exposed.
Do you think that we talk about teams being embarrassed one week and then playing better the next week? Do we think the defense could have a rebound from how embarrassed they should have been with their performance against Pittsburgh?
Let's hope so. Let's hope that they can, because they were embarrassed last week, I believe. So hopefully they can come back. But then again, I think they're facing a much better quarterback than what they faced last week with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think they're facing a much better offensive line. Those two tackles for Tampa are damn good. Now, their interior line, they got some work. But those two tackles are future tackles. Like, we're going to be good. If they stay healthy, we're going to be good for the next 10 years. That's how much talent they have at those tackle positions. So, I don't know. I don't.
We've got who's in, who's out. One kind of surprising name. We'll get to that coming up right here on the pregame show, live from Twin Peaks in Madison. It is the award-winning pregame show on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Time now to take a look at who's in and who is out today for the Titans against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Let's start taking a look at the inactives today for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Out today, corner Carlton Davis is out. He's a starter for them. Guard Matt Feeler, cornerback Josh Hayes, running back Keyshawn Vaughn is out. Whoa. Tight end David Wells and quarterback John Wolford is inactive today. I assume that Wolford is the third quarterback for the Buccaneers.
What?
Inactive today for the Titans. Offensive lineman Daniel Brunskill is out. Wide receiver Treylon Burks. Cornerback Sean Murphy Bunting. Outside backer Rashad Weaver. And let me just say this. If I don't ever see Rashad Weaver play for the Titans again, I'm not going to be upset about it. Wide receiver Colton Dowell. Outside backer Caleb Murphy. And quarterback Ryan Tannehill is inactive today for the Titans. Mm-hmm. I guess the ankle is not fully healed for Tannehill, which means Malik Willis will be the backup. Guys, this week Mike Vrabel made the decision to name Will Levis the starting quarterback of the Titans. I thought he was going to wait until Tannehill was entirely healthy. The fact that Tannehill is inactive today with the ankle injury is, or at least makes it a little surprising to me, that he would go ahead and name Levis the starter when he didn't have to on Tuesday of this week.
Well, I think he wanted to let, even though I believe he told, Will Levis, listen, before he told everybody else, obviously, you're the starting quarterback. But he wanted to make sure there was no, speculations on who's going to be the quarterback. He wanted to let not only the team know, but the city of Nashville know, this is your quarterback moving forward. I know he didn't say this is your quarterback moving forward, but the minute that man got underneath center and started taking snaps, he became your quarterback of the future. You don't go back and insert, Ryan Tannehill. I think he did it just so Will could feel at ease, just so Will can go into a Wednesday practice knowing that it's his job. Everybody knows that it's my job. Now I can, act accordingly. I am the starting quarterback. I don't have to worry about whether he's going to, name Ryan Tannehill or Malik Willis. I am the guy moving forward. That gives him a lot of confidence. Like, this is my offense from here on out. I don't have to look over my shoulder anymore.
Yeah, and it just puts a period on a lot of questions that people wanted to know. Is Will Levis going to start? Ryan going to start? So I think he did a great job by just announcing it early, because it puts a lot of things to rest. It put me to rest. It put you to rest. It put Derek to rest. It put the whole fan base to rest, because everybody basically knew that Ryan Levis was going to be actually the quarterback. So it wasn't a big, big surprise. But to set the tone early, to make your quarterback that's a rookie feel confident and know that he's a starter, I think Mike Vrabel did a great job.
Well, I think part of this, too, was if Tannehill was a starting quarterback, I think Tannehill probably is playing today.
I
that because he's not the starting quarterback, it's like, okay, let's, give it another week. Mm-hmm. And also the Titans kind of owe this to Ryan a little bit from the standpoint of, last year, you rushed it back to try to help out the team. Now we're going to go with Will Levis, so take your time because you're going to be a free agent at the end of the year.
But what happens if Will Levis struggles today and throws – I'm just saying this. He throws like 3 or 4 picks and then all of a sudden Ryan is healthy. Do you still stay with Will Levis?
Oh, yeah. He's your quarterback now. There's no going back. You take him out of the lineup because he throws 1 or 2 interceptions. What are you saying to the young quarterback? Yeah. You don't believe in him. Yeah. You don't believe in him. You pull him out, I don't believe in you. On a team that isn't, that isn't equipped to win many games in this league at this point in time. We hope they get better in the offseason, but at this point in time, this team is not equipped. And if you bench the future because he's thrown 2 interceptions, you're telling them basically, you're not good enough, dude. And you can't go backwards. You got to continue to ride with this young man and let him make his mistakes this year with a team that isn't good, and then going to next year where he's built this confidence or he knows this league, add more players to that plate for him, add more playmakers, and allow him to flourish that way.
Well, I just don't think that – and I feel, I don't want to sit there and say that I think that you probably feel the same way I do, Derek, but, I mean, I believe that once the young guy gets put in as the quarterback, the young guy is the quarterback until you're done with the young guy. And I'm not talking about done with the young guy in 2023. Uh-huh. I'm talking about he's the quarterback – until you're done with him in 2025, 2026.
Yeah.
Like, that's once you make the young guy the starting quarterback. Vrabel had a little bit of cover from the standpoint that Tannehill was hurt.
Uh-huh.
So that before he named Levis the quarterback, he could come out and say, well, he was only filling in for an injured Tannehill, but Tannehill's always been our quarterback. Whereas once he gets up there and says, Will's the quarterback going forward, and Tannehill has to do a press conference where he's like, yeah, it sucks. Like, once that happens, Will's the quarterback until he's not the quarterback anymore. And I don't think that Tannehill's not an option unless Levis is hurt. Like, the only option for him to go in, he is now the Neil O'Donnell of this team.
Yeah.
That's where they are. Like, that's what.
That's a great point.
Now, I guess I'm a little surprised that Vrabel decided to officially do it if Tannehill was still going to be trying to actually come back from the ankle injury and wasn't ready. That having been said, my guess is the reason that Vrabel told everybody is because Vrabel, he got up there on Friday and he said, I'll have an answer for you on Tuesday, which is very un-Vrabel-like. But so he gets up there and says, we'll have an answer on Tuesday about the depth chart. My guess is Vrabel had already made up his mind that they were going with Levis, and Vrabel wanted to make sure that he talked to Tannehill first. That he wanted to have the discussion with Tannehill, that Tannehill didn't hear it from somebody else, that, you know, he probably felt, and maybe I'm projecting my own feelings onto Vrabel about how I would do it.
No, that's the truth.
But that, you know, I need to be the one to tell you this, not Twitter. And so Vrabel probably knew the whole time that the next time I see Ryan, he's going to be called into the office. We're going to tell him, like, hey, man, Will's going to be the quarterback. Then we're going to tell the team Will's the quarterback. Then I'm going to announce it because you can't keep that a secret.
No, you can't keep it a secret. And you know, there's a way that you go about doing business. And I think, Mike, this whole thing was because of Ryan Tannehill, to make sure that that transition was as smooth, because it's not just it's not just me doing you right. It's me doing you right, Will Levis right, in the locker room right.
Yep.
Because if I do it any other way, now I may be causing friction between you and the young quarterback.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, I go back to what RG3 said this past week in regards to Joe Flacco and Lamar Jackson. He said the Ravens brought me in because Joe would not be that guy to help Lamar. Mm-hmm. There was friction, so they had to bring in RG3, a veteran guy, a guy that wasn't he wasn't a guy that was threatening Lamar Jackson for potentially being a starter. He was a guy to be there just in case. So just in case, you are a mentor now. You are a mentor to Jackson. Joe's not going to do it. That's the type of situation that Mike didn't want to run into,
yeah,
where the incumbent and the starter now are bumping heads.
Yep.
That's not a good locker room.
And it causes bad friction with
exactly
the team, because you remember – no, you weren't here. You weren't near yet when Chris Chandler
and
Mac, they did not like each other. I mean,
fun fact, boy, Derek was actually the pick that was used on Derek was acquired for Chris Chandler.
What you do that for, man? No, but it'll mess up the mojo of the – was that a word, mojo?
I guess if you want to make it work.
Of the team, because you just don't want to do that. But the thing about this, Derek, we saw where there was quarterback switch multiple times. They don't address the team and say this is going to be the starting quarterback. You just get out there practice. You see him walk in the huddle.
Yeah.
They don't tell us that. They don't
if
tell
it's
the
short
team.
Term, you're absolutely
if it's
right.
They don't tell us.
Sure.
We just get out there in the practice. We thinking this got a quarterback. All of a sudden, you see Neil O'Donnell or somebody in there. So it's not addressing the team. It's just that he wanted to let everybody know so, you know, a Tannehill wouldn't find out behind the scenes.
And I think that was probably the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, as far as Tannehill's concerned, Tannehill says he's going to be there for Levis and he's going to be a pro and everything else. I commend Tannehill for that. That's not his job. That's not what he was paid and brought in to do. But I think Levis needs it.
That's his job now.
It is his job now. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the kind of thing where it's like, dude, you're making a lot of money still, and you're going to be standing over there on the sidelines. But I do believe that Will Levis needs Tannehill, and that next year somebody else will be the backup quarterback, right? Matt Barkley will be the backup quarterback. Case Keenum will be the backup quarterback. You know, one of these guys that's like a career backup will be the backup to Levis. And when that happens, I think if Levis makes it, I would hope that he credits what Tannehill did for him as a big step in his development. I hope he credits that because – not because like, you know, oh, that would be the right thing to do or the nice thing to do – but for him to credit it because that is what Ryan did.
Exactly.
And that's what they need out of Ryan. And I, quite frankly, I expect Tannehill to be that guy.
Me too. He hasn't shown me anything that would make me think, you know, the contrary. He got up there at the podium during the press conference, and he said all of the right things. And not that he said all the right things. You knew that he was disappointed, But yet still you felt, okay, he's going to go out there and he's going to help the young quarterback.
Yeah, it sounded sincere.
Exactly. He's a guy that, listen, I can't go out there and perform. You know, the young guy looked really good the two games that he played. Let me go out here. I'm not going to be here next year. Let me go out here and help this young guy as much as possible.
Yeah, and the thing about it is he experienced this with Mariota. I mean, it's the same situation, but the roles were flipped to where he had to take Mariota's position, so he understands both sides. So I think that's a good job by Ryan Tannehill, not sit there pouting on the side, but sit there and took responsibility and say, you know what, I'm going to make this situation work, even if I don't like it.
I don't really think that this is very comparable to Mariota getting benched for Tannehill.
No, I'm just saying that he's been in the same position to where he took over,
position. But the reason why they gave him the job was because Mariota was stinking it up. They didn't give Levis the job because Tannehill was stinking it up.
Well, didn't Mariota get hurt in that game?
No, Mariota just couldn't hit the broadside of a barn.
Well, I know that, but he got hurt too.
He got hurt in the preseason. Didn't tell anybody. Like, he tried to dive into the end zone against the Patriots for a touchdown in a preseason game. And he, like, ruined his shoulder.
Oh. Man. Well, I mean.
But, again, like, this was, you know, to Tannehill, it was like, Ryan, please save this team because Marcus is doing such a bad job. Whereas with this, it's like, hey, you're not doing a bad job, and we set you up for failure with this offensive line and with no receivers. But we're going to make the change because this guy's our future and you're not. You're 35 years old, you're on an expiring contract, and he's not.
Yeah.
Coming up next, TD joins us live from Tampa. We'll get the latest from Teron as always. Meanwhile, in the fourth quarter, the Colts, and what I'm sure has just been a thrilling performance, are up 7-6 over the Patriots. Again, that game with about 9 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. We're live at Twin Peaks. It is the pregame show on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. We are live out of Twin Peaks for the award-winning pregame show. Titans and Buccaneers getting ready to kick off in just over an hour. And as we always do in the pregame show, we check in with ESPN's Teron Davenport, who's live in Tampa, presented by The Beast Unleashed. Zero caffeine, zero sugar, and all the adult beverage fun. TD, let's start with what I thought was a little surprising news today. Ryan Tannehill inactive, which means Malik Willis will be the backup. Is it still the lingering issue with the ankle? Could Tannehill perhaps give it a go? What are we hearing down in Tampa?
Yeah, it's not as much of Tannehill being inactive as it is, remember, the QB rule. So he'll be the third quarterback. That's something that we kind of thought was going to be the case throughout the week. He didn't practice on one day, and he was limited to, you know, a couple others. So it's no surprise Malik Willis will be the backup, and, I mean, it's Will Levis' show. So we'll see what happens.
TD, what's the expectation for the offensive line with all the injuries that we've seen, not just, you know, who's going to start today, but also who may be the swing tackle with Nicholas Petit-Ferrer now out and what they may do there?
Yeah, so it'll be Andre Dillard at left, Duranski at left guard. Brewer, obviously, at center, your favorite player. Then you know, right guard's going to be Dylan Raidens, and right tackle, Chris Hubbard's back. So as far as the swing side of things, Jalen Duncan, he's someone that, I mean, look, he has some good snaps against Pittsburgh, so it'll be interesting seeing if, you know, he has to get in the mix. But that's the way it'll look. You know, obviously, Levin, he's pretty much their piano man. They put Corey Levin up and down the line. He played tackle spots, guard, center as well. And by the way, I believe Andrew Ruptures is up too. So, you know, that gives you depth there at tackle.
Now, the defensive line, TD, obviously this has been a disappointing defensive line the last 4 or 5 weeks of the season. Has there been extra, you know, emphasis on doing some things different, or they're just going to stick the status quo and guys need to just play better?
Yeah, I watched some of their technique work during individual period, and they were doing some more things than normal just as far as, like, being able to – just the hand-to-hand, like, using the leverage, like, shifting and then grabbing the elbow and kind of, like, getting the lineman's arm off, like, keeping his hands off. So I did see that. Everything else is pretty much status quo, but you know, those guys, they got to start winning up front, that's for sure.
Now, the going back to the offense, TD, do we expect to see, even though this Buccaneer secondary has been one of the worst, if not the worst, in the National Football League, are we going to see a heavy dose of Derrick Henry today?
I think it's going to be a mixture, honestly, because you look, you had the ineligible there for Carlton Davis. You know, he's not going to be active. You know, so he's inactive. Then you got Jamel Dean's inactive. So an already poor secondary is actually even worse with those two guys being out. And I was surprised that Davis, you know, was inactive. But, you know, that was their best option against DeAndre Hopkins. So I would expect them to pass the ball a lot. But, I mean, they'll probably still have Derrick Henry get his touches and work play action and all that stuff. I mean, you don't change the game plan according to the opposing team's personnel, you know?
You know, TD, the Tennessee Titans have struggled a lot in the red zone to score touchdowns. You know, what you got Kyle Phillips coming back. What do they need to do to score touchdowns as opposed to field goals in the red zone?
Yeah, I think it's really the offensive line. They got to block that. But, I mean, guys got to win and go back. Winning your matchup one-on-one. I think, you know, you look at there was on the 19-yard line last week, you know, Hopkins ran a fade and Joey Porter Jr. went with him and Kyle Phillips. He had the slant. They blitzed the linebacker, and he replaced where the linebacker was. Now, if Levis puts it on Phillips, that's a touchdown, or he's at least, you know, inside the 5-yard line. So that's something that Levis, you know, we talked to him this week about that. It's like working on seeing what the defense gives you and not as much pre-diagnosing where you want to go. So you have that. I think, you know, because he was hurt so much last year, a lot of people forget how much of an athlete Will Levis is. Read up, get some of that going, RPOs, those different things, to give him opportunities to use his legs, just like Ryan Tannehill did a couple years ago, you know, when they were outstanding in the red zone.
You know, just looking at this Bucs wide receiving core, we talked a little bit a second ago, you got Godwin, you got Evans. You know, what do you think the secondary needs to do? Do you think you'll see more double coverages against Evans and that allow Godwin to get it open? So what do you think the secondary needs to do to really stop them from giving up explosive plays downfield?
Yeah, man, they have to plaster. It's imperative to plaster. Because, you know, Baker Mayfield, surprisingly, he could quietly, he could extend plays. But, you know, when you look at this officiating crew, apparently they are one of the lowest percentage of calling pass interference and stuff like that. And, you know, Mike Evans, you know, his receivers, we're not going to say he pushes off. He wards off, you know, so to make sure that he's able to get open throughout his route. You know, so that's something you got to see how much, you know, that's going to be against Christian Fulton, who likes to get his hands on the receivers too. Actually, Fulton was the first man out here working out. He's still out here working. So you like that. But that's just going to be about just those matchups, you know, Godwin and Avery, they're going to have to shade over top, you know, whenever that matchup is there. But I think you could allow Fulton to go ahead and take on whoever he has. But, you know, the Titans run a lot of zone, too.
TD, what, you know, as far as during the week when you were talking to the guys, what is the sense of why they are so different on the road than they are at home? And the games on the road are almost the same as each individual game, and the games at home are the same as all the other home games.
Yeah, they couldn't really put a finger on it, you know, and I remember I asked Shane Bowen about that. You know, the guys up front, and he was like, I don't know, maybe you're more amped up at home. I don't know what the case is, but he definitely acknowledged that was the situation. So it's just tough to put a finger on it because this team collectively is different, you know, on the road than they are at home.
Hey, TD, this is my last question. I was I went to a concert yesterday, and, you know, me and my girl went. So, you know, we're sitting there doing the concert, and this guy walks on the stage. And my girl was like, is that TD? I said, no, nah, baby, that's Seal.
Hey, tell him, Heidi Klum thought he looked nice.
He can mistake me for him anytime.
Oh, I'm good.
Well, I tell you what, I was down here on the field earlier walking around, and somebody – no, I'm not even going to do it.
Go ahead.
Thank you, as always, on the program. I didn't know what Seal looked like.
I said, said, listen, if Seal is good enough for Heidi Klum, then make me Seal.
This is one ugly man. My goodness.
Oh. Wow. Hey, Heidi didn't think so. She didn't think so.
She must have seen the inner beauty.
Exactly.
You know, like, hey.
Sometimes that's what it takes, the inner beauty.
You didn't know who Seal was?
I've never heard of. Who is Seal?
He's a singer.
Yeah.
Well, clearly, but
you
I don't.
Never heard of Seal?
Never heard of Seal before.
I'm going to sing a song for you.
Wow. You never heard of Seal,
Unbelievable.
Man.
Unbelievable. Where you been, man?
Is Seal like a popular. I mean, obviously, he's dating Heidi Klum.
Yeah.
Okay, back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a little bit younger than you guys.
I don't think he makes music anymore, but. You know, at least I haven't.
Did he and Heidi Klum break up? Or they get married? Or what's the deal with
that? They got married. They were married for a while. A good while. They had children. I don't know if they're married now, but.
Good for Seal.
Yeah.
Gives hope to all the rest of the guys out there that may not be very fortunate.
So basically, you said for the ugly guys.
Yeah. For the ugly guys. They're not so fortunate. No, I never knew that was. I assumed he was ugly. So then, while you guys were talking. Well, because, you know, you always said the TV's ugly. So while I was. I looked up Seal, and, you know, like all this stuff came. So I put in Seal, Heidi Klum, and then they. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness gracious. All right, picks to click. Who is going to click for the Titans? We will get to that coming up next. We are live again from Twin Peaks in Madison. It is the pregame show, the award-winning pregame show, I should say, on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Picks to click are presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment, and we have been picking, and they have not been doing a lot of clicking. Of late, although I did pick DeAndre Hopkins before the Falcons game, so I felt pretty good about that one. But without further ado, oh, by the way, it is 10-6 Indianapolis, 5 minutes and change to go, but New England is driving. Can they score a touchdown? I'm going to assume probably not, but we shall see in that one. And a loss by the Colts would take them to 4-6, and I have no idea what that means for the standings as far as a 3-5 versus a 4-6. So with that, it's time now to pick to click, presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment. Chris Sanders,
yes,
who's clicking today for the Titans on offense?
This is an easy pick for me. I'm going with Hopkins. And the reason I'm going with Hopkins, if you look at the secondary of the Bucs, they gave up 5 touchdowns. They consistently gave up explosive plays. And we already know that DeAndre Hopkins is an explosive wide receiver. He beats man-to-man coverage, and I think he's going to have a big day, over 100 yards.
100 yards for DeAndre Hopkins on the road where the Titans don't pass very well. Derek Mason, who's clicking for you today?
My pick to click is none other than Nick Westbrook-Ikhine.
Let's go.
And this, against this horrid secondary, a lot of emphasis is going to be put toward stopping DeAndre Hopkins. And I think this is where Nick Westbrook-Ikhine does what he do best, makes those crucial catches, third down catches, in the middle of the field catches. He gets an opportunity to redeem himself from a drop pass some weeks ago. So, to me, my pick to click is Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. I'm not going to say he's going to have 100 yards, but he's going to make a few plays that are going to be critical in what the Titans want to do.
I'm about to go with a Floyd Reese pick. Oh, my God, Mac Jones just threw the stupidest interception I think I've ever seen.
Man, I kind of had a feeling he was going to
throw. Oh, my God, he sucks. Okay.
Oh, wow.
My pick to click is a Floyd Reese-like pick to click. I am going with Peter Skoronski, Aaron Brewer, and Dylan Raidens at right guard today as my pick to click. I'm going to take the guard, center guard, and I'm going to tell you why. Because with Vita Vea in the middle there, what I fear, what I worry about is I worry about the interior getting pushed back, which is going to force Will Levis back, and Shaq Barrett is going to have a day on Andre Dillard. So you cannot allow Shaq Barrett to get back there if Levis can't step up. Levis is going to have to be able to step up, and Derrick Henry's going to have to be able to run the ball. I think those are both prerequisites, and I don't think Dillard has any chance against Barrett. So give me Skoronski, who did not play well against Pittsburgh, had a so-so game. Brewer, who has got to learn how to snap the ball in shotgun, which is driving me crazy. And Dylan Raidens, who I got to give Dylan Raidens credit.
Uh-oh.
Dylan Raidens played his butt off on Thursday night in relief of PT against the Steelers. I think he should be starting at a tackle spot because Dillard is what he is. But with the injury to Brunskill, he's in there. So give me the guard, center guard, as my pick to click.
All right. I mean, I've done that before where I picked the whole basic unit. You picked basically the whole unit.
Really. I don't want Dillard.
But still, you pick the unit.
I think guard to guard.
When you pick three out of the five, you're picking the unit. Yeah.
And then pick to click, not pick to click. You pick like everybody on the roster.
I can't get over that Mac Jones interception. Boy, that was
Was that ball tipped?
I hope it was.
I hope it was, too, because that was that was a bad interception.
Chris Sanders, defense, who's clicking today?
I'm going Al Shazier. Did I say his name right this time?
No.
Al Shazier. Can I just call him that?
Yeah, you can call him.
You can call him whatever you want. You can call him AZ.
AZ, yeah. I'm going to call him AZ. I think he needs to show a big time today. I mean, we looked at him in camp. He was consistently around the ball. And if you look at the run game that the Tennessee Titans have, it's atrocious. And I think that he needs to make some plays in the run game, but also watch the eyes of Baker Mayfield and stop him from making plays.
Man. To me, it's Fulton again. I think Fulton has played well the last two games. I think now he's starting to play within the game and not try to play for a contract. When he was playing for a contract, he was giving up big plays because he was guessing. Play your keys, believe what you see, make the tackle, or make the breakup. Don't try to go for the big shot, the big interception, the splash play, just so you can then get a huge contract he did in the season. But he's played well the last two games. He's going to need to play extremely well this week because he's probably the only guy that can somewhat match up with Mike Evans. I just think Roger McCreary coming back from an injury, he's just too small. He's going to be physical with him. I tell you that, McCreary is, but Fulton has to be the guy that whenever Mike Evans lines up on his side, he has to be a shutdown corner.
Gardner Minshew just made an incredible pass, which totally embarrasses, you know, Mac Jones for how terrible he was. Well, I mean, I just can't even get over it. Jeez. I do agree with you on Fulton. Fulton was actually going to be my pick to click here.
Ooh.
I mean, I'm going to go with Arden Key only because is he ever going to do anything?
At home?
He hadn't did anything since two-a-day practices.
I mean, in all seriousness, And I don't care if you sack the quarterback.
Uh-huh.
They got set the edge running the football. You know, and Rashad Weaver's down, which makes me think that the Gibson kid's going to play a little bit more that they got from the Bears. They've got to stop the run, and I think that Key's going to be a big part of it, and I'm going to go with him. But honestly, I could pick anybody on that defensive line. I am sick and tired of watching Scarbini teams move the football at will on the Titans, and that is in large part because they're not getting a pass rush and because they're not setting the edge against the run, and they're letting guys like Zach Moss run all over them, it's driving me crazy. Jaylen Warren, who I actually think's not a bad player, but I'm sick and tired of watching him run all over the Titans too. It's time for the Titans defense to get back to not being terrible.
Well, I'm sure that was the speech inside of the defensive line room, getting back to who they believe they are. They are at this point, they're far away from it. Now, today, they can start heading back in the right direction because Tampa doesn't run the football well. But they need to become that defense that we saw in the first two games that we believe they can be. They just hadn't showed up the last five.
You know, I just want to see a consistent team. I mean, when they're at home, they look like world beaters. They're consistently, they'll stop the run, but then they'll stop the pass. But also, they get on the road, and it's like they never played football before. So I just want to see a consistent defense that has the potential to be a great defense, but they got to play consistent on the road and also at home.
Those are our picks to click, presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment. A question I have for both of you guys. If the Titans win today, they'll go to 4-5.
Yes.
Then they'll be set up with a game on the road next week at Jacksonville. If they can get to 5-5 with a win over Jacksonville, is the playoffs a possibility for the 2023 Titans?
It's still a possibility. I think, you know, it puts them in a position where they're still in the hunt to win a division. You know, I think the ideal thing would be, you know, Jacksonville wins the day against San Fran, gets high on the horse, you know, and then have a huge letdown next week. You know, but if they win this game, they still get you can still see the light. It's not completely dark. You can still see some resemblance of a light at the end of the tunnel. But in order to have that light, they got to win this game.
Yeah, and I agree with you too, Derek. They have to win this game because if you look at the situation that's about to happen, they still need to play Jacksonville twice. They still got to play Houston twice, and then they got to play Indianapolis once. So those are division games that you still have the potential to win. So, you know, we can say, you know, what they need to do in the past, but if they don't win this game today, then they're going to be back on the eight ball again, and that's exactly what might happen.
Well, I think if they don't win today, right now, I don't think that it's realistic to talk about the playoffs. Right now, where they sit. Had they beaten the Steelers, I mean, that Steeler game was so big. Had they beaten the Steelers, they'd be 4-4 with a tiebreaker over Pittsburgh, who seems like a team. You know, you get another AFC win. You're playing Tampa Bay, you know, whatever. But with that loss to the Steelers, it really, to me, puts the playoff discussion really far in the rear view. Like, I think the playoffs are very unlikely. Mm-hmm. If they win this week, I don't think it really improves the playoff chances. The Jacksonville game would be, okay, now we can talk about the playoffs if they get to 5-5.
Yeah.
If they lose today, I don't think there's any chance to make the playoffs. I think it's
going to be really hard for them to make the playoffs because they're already one behind in the division because they lost to Indianapolis.
But think about all the tiebreakers, too, that they've lost, right? Uh-huh. They lost a tiebreaker with Cleveland.
Yeah.
They've lost a tiebreaker with Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Now, they have a tiebreaker over Cincinnati and the Chargers, who both could be potential wild card teams or kind of in that spot.
But they've lost the tiebreaker with Baltimore. If Baltimore doesn't win their division in their second, they still lose the tiebreaker to Baltimore.
Sure.
Wow.
But my point being is that I think that, like, the wild card is more likely for them than the division.
Yes.
And so that's why I'm looking at, you know, at 5-5, I feel like the wild card, you can probably get in if you can get to 9 or 10. If you can get to 9 or 10.
Nine
with your tiebreaker situation is probably bad.
Yeah.
But then think about this. Carolina's still on the schedule. Right now you're at 3. Uh-huh. Let's count today and say 4. Because, again, if you lose today, you're out.
Yes.
So 4. Carolina's 5.
Yep.
Then you've got. I mean, I don't want to sit here and say that Houston, you know, with rookie quarterback, that they're going to win those, but those are win-up bowl games.
Yes.
So now you're at 7. Uh-huh. Indy again puts you at 8. So then if you can win one of those Jacksonville games, you're at 9, and then you just got to win one other one, you know, down the stretch.
Well, if they lose to Jacksonville, and listen, obviously today's game, you know, sets the stage for what we're talking about moving forward. If they win this game, okay, now we can, like you said, now the playoffs is a possibility, a real possibility. But if they then follow that up with a loss to Jacksonville,
it's over. It's a wrap.
Because now you're not going to sweep Jacksonville. You didn't sweep Indianapolis. And we don't know if you're going to sweep Houston.
You just have to get to 5-5.
Yeah.
And then if you get to 5-5, we can talk about it. And here's the other thing. They have 4 home games, mm-hmm. right? So let's say they win the next 2 and they get to 5-5. How many home games did I say they have?
They have what?
4.
4.
They have
4
more. Okay, so you get to 5-5. Mm-hmm. You get those 4. Now you're at 9. Mm-hmm. That means you just have to win one on the road between Houston or Miami to get to 10.
Oh, wow.
Ooh.
So it's doable, but it's not doable if you lose today.
Well, it makes it really – that means you got to sweep the rest of your divisional games.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Unless you lose to – wow, they've just pulled Mac Jones. Bailey Zappi's in. Unless – you can lose at the Texans. That's the one you can lose. I'd prefer you to not lose at the Texans. You'd have to win either Houston or Miami on the road.
Yes.
And I Miami, I think, is kind of phony because anytime they play a good team, they get spanked.
But the Titans are not a good team.
Right. I just think that the way the Titans play defense on the road and play offense on the road, I don't think that they could put up enough points in order to have a fighting chance against Miami. So I would count that one out. I mean, it's not easy, but if you lose today, they got no shot at it. And there's a part of me that would be really disappointed if they lost today. And I think it's because I just don't think Tampa's very good. And you should be better than
them. Yeah, Tampa's not a good team overall. Their defense is not it's not good, and that's uncharacteristic of a Todd Bowles team. Their offense haven't been able to run the football effectively. They throw the football really well, but they haven't been able to run the football effectively, which makes them a one-dimensional team. So if you look at it from that standpoint, then, yeah, the Titans, this is a winnable game for them. But it's winnable only if the defensive front plays the way they're capable of playing.
Yeah, and also, too, you're talking about a Tampa Bay Buccaneer team that got embarrassed last week.
Yeah.
So they're going to come out with a lot of enthusiasm and energy. So they got, if the Tennessee Titans can weather that storm, hit them in the mouth early, then I think they can go down there and win in Tampa.
Coming up next, we'll take a look at the final line. We'll hear Mike Vrabel's keys to a Titans victory, and we'll make our game day predictions. Again, we are live out at Twin Peaks in Madison, where they have opened the doors. It is the award-winning pregame show on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. It is basically final in Germany. Bailey Zappe in for Mac Jones, throws an interception on a fake spike, and the New England Patriots are going to lose to fall to 2-8 on the season in what seems inevitably Bill Belichick's last year with the Patriots.
Man, it doesn't look good. All those white jerseys was around. I know you got to make a play, but, man, do you have to make that throw with five white jerseys around and one blue jersey?
I'm just going to say this. The Vrabel Patriot talk will intensify this week.
Oh, absolutely.
Hey, wasn't it 4th-and-2, though?
No, they spiked the ball.
They got the first down.
They got the first down, and then he threw it over there. The Vrabel to the Patriots talk, I think, is going to intensify because I think it's obvious that Bill Belichick will not be back as the coach of the Patriots
this upcoming season. Man, this game.
Ooh, doggy.
Whew.
And Indianapolis now sitting there at 5-5. Again, in order to make the playoffs, the Titans are going to have to get to 5-5, but it starts today, as they said, at 3-5 against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Mike Vrabel's key to the game. The Titans have been horrible on the road this season. This was Mike Vrabel talking about trying to figure out a way at Tampa Bay.
I think if we need to find a way to win on the road, we've played a close game in New Orleans, had too many turnovers. Didn't play or coach well enough in Cleveland, and we can go all the way down the road. I mean, it's been some good things and some productive plays that we've had. Again, it's just the consistency and the overall execution that you have to have to be able to win on the road in some of those situations.
Guys, what do we make of the fact that the Titans have been terrible this year on the road?
It's hard to understand why, because the same unit, same coaches, same plays at home that you have on the road.
And it doesn't matter who the quarterback is.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who the quarterback is.
Tannehill and Levis, they're playing the same games.
Yeah. It doesn't matter who the quarterback is. For some reason, you have not been able to, generate enough on the road to pick yourself up a victory. Does the crowd noise – is that a factor when you're away? I'm not sure. I don't know. One thing I do know is that this team in critical moments look much different away than they do at home.
Yeah, just kind of like being on a roller coaster, the highs and the lows. You watch them at home, and, when they played against the Falcons in the first two quarters, I mean, the front was consistently in Ritter's face. The secondary was playing okay, but then you get on the road, and the front is playing terrible, and the secondary is getting bad play. So I just think if they put together a good game like they do at home, then they can do some things. But you're looking at a team that's inconsistent on the road, and they got to be better in that situation.
Have you guys ever experienced it in your careers where you were so much better at home than you were on the road?
I mean, we did have a home win streak. That first year when we moved into Philadelphia, we didn't lose at home. I don't think we lost until middle of the second year, or possibly going into the third year. But
sure,
we were not a bad road team. You're right about that. So that's why I'm saying I don't understand where the disconnect is in regards to being at home and being on the road. I think one problem it could be is, what's one thing we always talk about throughout the NFL that travels? Defense. Defense travels no matter where you're playing, what the conditions is, defense travels. If you have a good one, they travel. Well, the Titans' defense, they're not packing their suitcases when they leave Nashville. That's the problem.
That's bad.
I know it's bad. They're not playing. They're not playing great at home.
No.
But they're getting sacks. They're getting pressures. But when they go on the road, they're not getting any of that.
It's just no energy. I mean, there's zero energy on the road. Zero. I mean, I don't. Just like with Derek, I don't know what the disconnect is, because, you know, you have that energy at home and you have that enthusiasm and everybody's flying around. And then you look at on the road, you know, you can't get off blocks. You got, you know, no interceptions here. You got, you know, the secondary giving up explosive plays. So, you know, it's just wild like that.
I do wonder this. We talk about how now that the Patriots have already lost, the Vrabel to the Patriots talk is going to intensify this week, nationally and in New England for sure. If the Titans lose today, does the Vrabel to the Patriots talk intensify here?
I think it does, because it's going to intensify in Boston, which is going to, you know, find its way in the jet stream and infiltrate the Nashville area. It's going to find its way to get here, and which means if you don't win this game now, it may not be true. You know, Vrabel may not be going anywhere. But whatever's coming out of Boston is going to find its way here to Nashville, and it's going to intensify. Why? Because the New England Patriots just lost, and if the Titans drop another game, now they go, what, 3-6? So three and six. And they're pretty much out the playoff themselves.
Well, and not only that, I think, too, like the fans here, like outside of Nashville, the fans here are, I think, kind of sick of Vrabel. Like, I don't know how much of it is sick of Vrabel or how much of it's sick of the losing, but I think it's a little bit of both.
Grouchy.
And that's going to intensify if they lose to Tampa Bay. Let's take a look at the final line out of Vegas. The spread has gone from it opened at -1 for Tampa Bay to now -2.5.
Whoa.
So the money is coming in on Tampa Bay.
That's weird.
It's not like there's like a massive injury that's probably changed things, I would think. I don't.
And it's is it because now the, you know, the injury report is out and guys that are not playing? But that line went up prior to this game. It just didn't go up today. That line went up possibly yesterday or the day before that. So I don't know what happened that made, you know, it go from being 1 to 2.5. You know, because basically 1 is a pick'em. 2.5 is close to a pick'em, but they're giving Tampa, because they're at home, a slight edge.
I'm a little surprised that I think it's a total pick'em.
Well, I'm not surprised. I mean, the Titans only been favored in what, one game this season, Indianapolis, and they ended up losing that game. So I'm not surprised that the betting world don't believe in the Tennessee Titans.
Okay, with that, it's time now for our game day selections. Who wins today and why? What's the final score? Chris Sanders, we start with you.
I'm going to give one of them Chris Sanders dad jokes. Not dad jokes, dad predictions. And I'm even tripping while I'm going to even say this. But this is a dire win for the Tennessee Titans. I mean, this is a game that they have to win if they want to stay in the playoff hunt. This is what we kind of like talked about. I just think the Tennessee Titans are going to win 24-17. And the reason why I think they're going to win is because this is a pivotal point of the season. If you go down 3-6, then basically what you guys were talking about, the playoffs is over. They know that they've been playing terrible on the road, but they know that this is a big game for to get their season right back on track.
Chris Sanders going 24-17 Titans.
Oh, man. I am going 24-17 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Mm. This defense hasn't shown that they can play well on the road. This team hasn't shown that they can make the plays necessary on the road that they need to make. The coaches haven't proven that they can, you know, out-coach a team on the road. Because Mike Vrabel said it. Listen, it's the players, it's the coaching, it's everything when we're on the road. So if that is indeed the case, did you fix it? I'm not sure if they fixed it. So to me, Tampa – at home, got embarrassed last week. They lost, that defense got embarrassed last week, not the offense. Defense got embarrassed last week. I'm sure, you know, Todd Bowles is licking his chops, knowing that he's going against an offensive line that isn't good and a rookie quarterback. So I expect Tampa to come after him. to cause some confusion in our offensive line, and that ultimately will win them the game.
I am going with Tampa Bay, and I've been throwing around different numbers. I'll take Tampa Bay, but I'm going to take Tampa Bay 20-15.
20-15.
What? And I'll tell you why 15. I'll tell you why 15. Titans can't score in the red zone. So they're going to be kicking field goals. Five field goals for the Titans today. And I think Tampa scores in the fourth quarter with about 4 minutes to go because the Titans can't stop anybody when they have to. So I'm going to take Tampa Bay to win 20-15 today in an ugly game. But I feel confident in it because this is every game the Titans play on the road. Can't score in the red zone, can't protect the quarterback, can't get a big stop when they need it. That'll happen tonight. That's going to do it for us. We are out of here. Again, special thanks to our friends out here at Twin Peaks in Madison for taking great care of us. We will be back, I believe, at Twin Peaks in Cool Springs next week ahead of the Titans and the Jags. This has been the pregame show on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.